We are now having 40-plus thousand new cases a day. I would not be surprised if we go up to 100,000 a day if this does not turn around. And so I am very concerned.
Cool. Cool. Yeah, everything's fine.
Sup, you beautiful bastards. Hope you've had a fantastic Tuesday. Welcome back to the Philip DeFranco Show. Buckle up, hit that like button, and let's just jump into it. And the first thing we're going to talk about today is actually a quick note. Today, we cover a wide variety of stories, so if there's something you want to jump to or skip, a few months ago, we were able to add this feature that if you hover over this video, I think on everything pretty much except TV, you can actually see what I'm talking about in each part of the video, and you can jump around at your leisure. It's a great feature, and I hope you enjoy it. Then, in entertainment, business, the world isn't fair news. Let's talk about celebrities and how much money they apparently make. So if you're unfamiliar, Hopper HQ, which is a social media planning tool, they have this yearly list. The annual Instagram Rich List. This was the fourth annual one, and it estimates how much high-profile figures charge per sponsored post. And according to the company, it uses publicly and privately available data to create the most accurate list possible. Last year, you had Kylie Jenner topping that list, making an estimated $1.266 million per sponsored post. And underneath her, there's a lot of familiar faces, including Dwayne The Rock Johnson at the number six spot, estimating to be able to take in $882,000 for each sponsored post. But, oh, how the mighty have fallen. Kylie Jenner losing the crown, dropping to the number two spot, apparently only able to bring in an estimated $986,000 per post. Oh my God, embarrassing.
It hurts to say these numbers because they're so big.
And as far as now who is number one, who snatched that crown? We have my president, Dwayne The Rock Johnson, jumping about 15%, taking that number one spot and earning an estimated $1,015,000 per sponsored post. But the main thing here is poor Kylie Jenner. I mean, how is she gonna recover? She's what, now making high six figures instead of seven? It's also coming a month after Forbes stripped her of that self-made billionaire title, with Forbes saying that her estimated worth was $900 million, not even a member of the three comma club. And if you didn't see, Forbes accused her of exaggerating her cosmetic company's earnings, though Jenner called those claims inaccurate and unproven. And obviously, like 90% of this has been me snarkily talking about it, but I will say, I was gonna jump further into the other celebrities, the TikTokers, the YouTubers and such. But I will say, I feel weird talking about the story, not because, you know, the numbers are so big. Obviously, the market in our country decides what something is worth. You know, it serves as this kind of in-your-face reminder of something that we all are aware of. People live in drastically different Americas. You know, we cover such a range of stories on this show. It's like, I'm talking about this now, but I know that every Thursday we talk about the millions of people having to file jobless claims. You know, we got people freaked out about their jobs, many of which are not gonna return even if things bounce back and things are kind of scary and shaky right now. It's already rough for a lot of people, but I'm horrified to see what's gonna happen with rent and mortgages come August. And just like that, I brought the mood down. Great. Moving on. How did I take such a light story and ruin people's days with it? I know some of y'all say you love the show, but sometimes I just feel like I'm a bringer of sadness. Bringer of sadness. I am so great with words. Anyway, next story. Let's talk about India and TikTok. And the reason for that is the country banned the app late on Monday night, along with 58 other Chinese apps. The Ministry of Electronics and IT putting out a statement last night saying that it was banning apps that are, quote, prejudicial to sovereignty and integrity of India, defense of India, security of state, and public order. With that statement continuing, the Ministry of Information Technology has received many complaints from various sources, including several reports about misuse of some mobile apps available on Android and iOS platforms for stealing and surreptitiously transmitting users' data in an unauthorized manner to servers which have locations outside India. The compilation of these data, its mining and profiling by elements hostile to national security and defense of India, which ultimately impinges upon the sovereignty and integrity of India, is a matter of very deep and immediate concern which requires emergency measures. And then saying that their choice to ban these apps will safeguard internet users in India. Now, among these apps, TikTok was easily the biggest one banned, but also other Chinese apps like WeChat and Weibo were also on that list. The timing of this situation is also notable. It comes just around 2 weeks after that border clash between India and China, leaving around 20 Indian troops dead, with the Chinese casualties unknown at this time. We talked about it on the show before, is one of the most violent disputes that we've seen between these two countries in almost 50 years. And you know, while the government obviously cited privacy and security and the reasoning for their ban, I mean, many see these sweeping bans as a response to that incident. Right, you have Indian internet activist and journalist Nikhil Pawa telling Forbes, the decision to ban the apps appears to be largely a political one. There hasn't been any significant change to the way that these apps work in the last 3 months, and the announcement looks like it has been made to send a signal to China. But you also had responses from the parties involved here, right, including TikTok, which, regarding the security concerns brought up by the Ministry of Electronics and IT, the app said that it continuously followed government regulations, with Nikhil Gandhi, the head of TikTok India, saying in a statement, we have been invited to meet with concerned government stakeholders for an opportunity to respond and submit clarifications. TikTok continues to comply with all data privacy and security security requirements under Indian law and have not shared any information of our users in India with any foreign government, including the Chinese government. Further, if we are requested to in the future, we could not do so. We place the highest importance on user privacy and integrity. With the Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesperson also responding to this story and telling reporters, we want to stress that the Chinese government always asks the Chinese businesses to abide by international and local laws and regulations. Though, of course, it is important to note this is far from the first time that we've heard about privacy concerns with apps like this. In fact, it's not even the first time that India has banned TikTok. Back in April of 2019, the app was made unavailable per a court order citing concerns over explicit content and exploiting children, though that ban was lifted just about a week later. But during that ban, according to Reuters, ByteDance, TikTok's parent company, was losing $500,000 for every day that the app was banned in India. Right, so the consequences here could be massive, right? According to an April report from Sensor Tower, India has been the biggest driver of TikTok downloads, accounting for 611 million or 30% of the app's 2 billion total downloads. And for comparison, I mean, just to see how big this is, China is responsible for the second highest amount of downloads and only makes up less than 10% of total installations, with the United States right behind them at 8.2%. So this is a massive deal. And while you do have people like Brahma Chalani, a former advisor to India's National Security Council, tweeting, Chinese mobile app firms and other tech firms are beholden to the CCP under Chinese law. As extensions of the Chinese state, they pose a national security risk. India has done well to ban 59 Chinese apps, including TikTok. You also have people that are active on the app seeing this as a major loss, right? The platform is home to tons and tons of creators, with one TikTok user in New Delhi telling the New York Times, TikTok is one of the most accepted platforms when it comes to embracing different people. I've never seen a platform celebrate so many male belly dancers or male makeup artists or gay couples. Literally anyone. Another adding, there is a ripple effect in TikTok. Boys from small villages become overnight heroes. They change their lives. Their status in society grew. You also have people like Apar Gupta, the executive director of the Internet Freedom Foundation, telling that outlet, in terms of being a singular act of web censorship, it's impacted more Indians than any before. And as far as what happens from here, we are going to have to wait and see. We don't know if this is a permanent ban or not. And you have places like the Internet Freedom Foundation seeing this ban as a misuse of law and demanding for more transparency and data on their reasoning to be released. So for now, we're gonna have to wait to see what happens, right? Is this something that is permanent, or is it kind of used as leverage in some way? Time will tell, but until then, of course, I'd love to know what you think. Then let's talk about Hong Kong and China.
China.
Yeah, that one. And we're talking about this because yesterday evening, we saw China officially passing a national security law that will allow it to bypass a ton of special protections for people in Hong Kong. All right, so let's break it down. China first announces the bill on May 21st. The next day, China's parliament files a proposal, and just a week later, that proposal was approved by China's parliament. Now, at that time, details around this law were pretty scarce, but we did know it was meant to target several things. Secession, subversion, terrorism, and any activities by foreign forces that interfere in Hong Kong. All right, so basically, the goal here was to stamp out dissent and pro-democracy protests that have been continuing on in Hong Kong for over a year now. And incredibly notable here, this law would also allow China to implement its own law enforcement offices in Hong Kong to, quote, fulfill relevant duties to safeguard national security, with those offices reportedly also having the power to oversee education about national security in Hong Kong schools, with the state-run newspaper Xinhua also reporting that Hong Kong Chief Executive Carrie Lam would be able to appoint specific judges to hear national security cases. And of course, one of the big kickers to this bill was that in some cases, Beijing would actually be able to effectively extradite people from Hong Kong to mainland China, which is extremely notable because that's the whole reason these protests even started in the first place. But like I said, the details around this bill were still largely under wraps. I mean, even a draft version of the law was never publicly released. You even had Hong Kong's top leaders admitting that they didn't know any details about the bill besides what Chinese state media had aired, with Lam nonetheless saying that she would support it. So unsurprisingly, what we saw around this time was a ton of outrage within pro-democracy groups in Hong Kong. And in fact, one of the first major protests that we saw in the city following the coronavirus shutdown was in response to this law's proposal. But like I said, we saw this law today going into effect. Also, notably, going into effect, even though the details still have not been published, but it's apparently now part of Hong Kong's de facto constitution, the Basic Law. And so because all of this happened, we've seen Twitter users starting to delete their accounts en masse, pro-democracy political parties disbanding altogether, businesses removing posters and signs showing support for the movement. You also have a number of groups supporting Hong Kong independence, saying that they're going to cease operation in the city and move abroad. And because all of that's happening, we've already seen pro-Beijing lawmakers in Hong Kong praising this law, with one saying, a comment was made today by the speakers that the law basically already has had its deterrent effect. In the past, Hong Kong has been too free, but at the same time, you had a pro-democracy lawmaker saying, when I walked on the streets on midnight of June 30th, the night of the handover, I felt sad, but we still had some hope that the mainland government may honor its promise. We could also hope on the possibility of having genuine universal suffrage. But now we are not only denied the hope of a democratic political system, we also will no longer have our freedoms of press, speech, expression, protest, all of that will be over. Now, connected to this story, what we've also seen is a promise to the United Nations Human Rights Council from Carrie Lam, with her saying that the law will not affect Hong Kong's judicial independence or the legitimate rights and freedoms of individuals. Also promising that it would not be retroactive, right? So saying that past actions wouldn't matter. Saying that mainland China will only extradite people in Hong Kong in rare specified situations. Now, with all of that said, to inject my opinion briefly, I personally, this is my opinion, do not believe that Carrie Lam has done anything that has made it so that people should believe her. Calling her pro-Beijing doesn't feel like the right term. It feels like she is a tool of the Chinese Communist Party. Right, so Carrie Lam can say whatever she's gonna say, but internationally, it doesn't feel like a lot of people believe her. You know, it's why prior to this law's passage, we saw Taiwan's president pledging support for Hong Kong, British Prime Minister Boris Johnson promising to accept millions of Hong Kong refugees. Here in the United States, you had Secretary of State Mike Pompeo announcing that the U.S. no longer views Hong Kong as autonomous, meaning Hong Kong was potentially subject to the same tariffs that China currently faces. And on Friday, we also saw the United States restricting visas for Chinese officials deemed responsible for eviscerating Hong Kong freedoms. Notably there, Beijing then retaliated by announcing visa restrictions for U.S. officials who had behaved extremely badly over Hong Kong. Then, just yesterday, ahead of the news that Hong Kong had passed this law, we saw Secretary of Commerce Wilbur Ross saying this. Commerce Department regulations affording preferential treatment to Hong Kong over China, including the availability of export license exceptions, are suspended. Further actions to eliminate differential treatment are also being evaluated. We urge Beijing to immediately reverse course and fulfill the promises it has made to the people of Hong Kong and the world. You also had Pompeo announcing that the United States was ending defense equipment exports to Hong Kong, saying, "We cannot risk these items falling into the hands of the People's Liberation Army, whose primary purpose is to uphold the dictatorship of the Communist Party of China by any means necessary." Ultimately, that is where we are with this story right now. This is not the end of it. There's likely to be a number of additional international sanctions in the coming days. And update here, this morning, the full text of that law was finally released. Now, there's a lot of details here, but a few very notable ones. One, according to Axios, the law defines crimes such as terrorism and sedition broadly, but mandates harsh sentences, in many cases life imprisonment for those found to have committed them. Two, it includes sweeping definitions of crimes and penalties that give the government broad power to limit people's political freedom while explicitly denying any kind of independent oversight of the law or how it is carried out. And three, it prohibits collusion with foreign governments or institutions, which could potentially target those who have called on international bodies to condemn China or lobby the United States Congress for sanctions. This, also interestingly enough, all happening on the 23rd anniversary of the United Kingdom returning Hong Kong to China. Also, regarding protests in the city, some pro-democracy groups are still planning to hold demonstrations today, though they are expected to be much smaller in number. But yeah, like I said, that is where we are with this story now. We'll have our eyes on it, and of course, I pass the question off to you. What are your thoughts on this? And then the last thing we're gonna talk about today is just wow. I know some people are gonna dismiss the story as something that's just drama. You can feel free to skip this story today. But the story that we're talking about today could have massive legal implications with some of the biggest people on the internet. So remember at the end of the first story of yesterday's show, I said that there was this whole different angle to the story that we're starting to look at. Things were starting to develop regarding Jeffree Star. Well, that just blew up today. Tati Westbrook, who of course is massive in the makeup community, she's a businesswoman. She released a video today that has set the internet on fire called Breaking My Silence. And in this video, she makes some massive accusations against Jeffree Star and Shane Dawson. I think the best way to try to tell this story is to just let the people involved who were filming, who have been writing things, tell the story. I'm just gonna kinda try to be the guide of highlights, and if you wanna see the full versions, because all of this is developing right now, I'll link to everything down below. Okay. So Tati starts off by mentioning that legal is involved in this.
It's been a long time coming for me to share with you some very, very important things, and I am gonna be reading from what is approved by my legal team. So I am, once I start getting into what I need to share with you guys today, what I feel is important to share with you, I won't be deviating. And it's at the advice of my legal counsel.
She then goes on to mention the fallout that she still feels all this time after the scandal.
For over a year now, every time the scandal is revisited, either in the mainstream media or through social platforms, I become the number one target of relentless hate while remaining voiceless. I've lost over a year of my life terrified of social media and terrified of speaking up against the people that used, coerced, and manipulated me into uploading my video in May of last year.
Tati then goes on to talk about reconnecting with James Charles.
Back in December 2019, after Shane and Jeffree's series ended, James Charles came to my LA home, and we compared DMs, texts, and stories about what had happened behind the scenes. We apologized to each other, forgave each other, and agreed to wait patiently until it was safe for me to share my story. Since that night, James Charles has repeatedly said that he wanted to be beside me for this video. But I felt it was important that I do it alone. because he deserves my first apology.
Tati then talks about how she met James, how their friendship developed, what she saw in him, but then going on to say,
however, prior to the scandal last May, I'd started growing frustrated with what I perceived as a progressing sense of entitlement. And I felt that he was making some detrimental choices that could jeopardize his career and safety. None of my concerns became overwhelming until after I met Shane Dawson.
And regarding why Tati said that she ended up making that Bi Sister video, she said,
I never called James Charles a p***er, and I never said that James Charles was a danger to society. My video was not made with any malice. I did not publicly air any of the horrific accusations that were being made behind the scenes. While I was definitely upset that he had accepted a sponsorship from the biggest rival to my brand, Halo Beauty, I did not make my video because of vitamins. I made it as a result of all of the poisonous lies that were fed to me by Shane Dawson and Jeffree Star.
Right, so that's seemingly backing up what we mentioned yesterday, that there had been talk in the community that possibly Shane Dawson and Jeffree Star had something to do with that video being made. With Tati going on to say that after the video was uploaded, she was not served a lawsuit or any cease and desist, but only privated the video at the request of YouTube because they said that it was a bad look for their platform. Tati then going on to apologize to James again, trying to provide some insight as to why she made the video based off of what she was hearing.
James, I am so sorry that I allowed myself to be poisoned and weaponized against you. I'm sorry that I bought into any of their lies. Believing those lies and allowing myself to be gaslit into making that video is one of the biggest regrets of my life. I should have tried harder to reach you over those concerns in person. And I'm sorry for giving up on you. The information they were giving me was terrifying. I thought your career and freedom were in jeopardy. I was trying to get you to put your phone down and seek help because I was told there were a lot of victims that were going to come forward to destroy you. I was foolish for believing them. I was scared. I thought if I called you out, you would put your phone down and stop the detrimental behavior I was being made to believe was true.
She also talks about Jeffree Star in this video regarding her friendship with him. She said, you know, I thought that I could make him a better person. But also in this, she talks about her concerns with Jeffree, and then she hits on this very big part.
One thing that he did that did concern me a lot was how he would frequently comment about how much dirt he held on other brand owners and members of our YouTube community. I believe that he actually held blackmail material on many people and was capable of destroying the entire community. This worried me about him, and I stayed and I tried my best to be a positive influence.
And then Tati issues this very big warning, making it feel like this is just the beginning of something much, much bigger.
My opinion, he's gonna go off, guys, and I don't think anyone, I don't think he will hold back, and I think we need to be prepared to understand that we need to forgive the people that he is holding hostage with veiled threats of exposure. We need to be prepared to forgive them. Otherwise, this won't stop. So prepare to not cancel everyone and give them a chance. It's not right. It is not right to try to trap people into saying things that they wouldn't otherwise say. It's not right.
Tati then goes on in the video to claim that in the lead up to her making the video, you know, she would always hear Jeffree constantly talking shit about James. Jeffree connects Tati to Shane. She says, you know, I've only really seen his newer videos. She says he seems like a great creator. She talks about, you know, maybe a future documentary. She says she opened up with Shane, saying that she was a victim of sexual assault. Tati then claims that Shane Dawson says, I want you in the documentary, saying that it's rapidly changing because James Charles is doing horrible stuff, saying they're calling James a monster with many victims, claiming that Shane was planning to interview victims of James Charles for the docuseries, saying almost every day there were new accusations, Shane even offering to edit, title, provide a thumbnail for her Bi Sister video. Tati then goes on to describe a situation that sounds very similar to other creators' experience. A Jeffree Star offers for people to hear audio evidence of a victim.
I struggled with the decision to film my video for days. The night before I did film, Jeffree sent me what he claimed was an audio file from an alleged victim and told me to listen to the pain in their voice. The audio was clearly a small portion of a larger conversation. It wasn't enough for me to contact the authorities, It was enough to scare me.
But she felt that it was not her place to contact the police or alleged victim, adding that as a survivor of sexual assault herself, she knows just how terrifying it all is. Also noting that she didn't include that in the video, and she then goes on to say that she was concerned about the video. She contacts Shane Dawson.
The night before posting my video by sister, I texted Shane sharing my concerns for James Charles, that he was out of the country on the high floor of a hotel, and I was afraid for him hurting himself. Shane texted me back and said that I should not be nervous about the 50th floor, that James Charles was a narcissist, and that he would never do that.
With Tati going on to claim that the day the video went up, Shane Dawson requested to come over to film what was happening. She then declines that request, and she notes,
after a few days of Jeffrey fanning the flames on Twitter, no victims appeared as they had stated would happen. And no evidence came forward as they stated would happen.
And going on to say that the last day that she talked with Jeffree Star was the day before he released his Never Doing This Again video. She then goes on to say that with everything that happened, she became a shell of her former self. She then goes on to talk about reconnecting with James Charles, putting pieces together.
It wasn't until the series ended in December, when James Charles and I met, that I started to realize what had actually happened. Over the next few months, a few people have bravely come forward with more information, and the pieces of what we believe actually happened are coming together. Make no mistake, this is far from over. I've been terrified for a very long time, so much so that I had to relocate again 2 months ago, and I have taken serious security precautions to ensure my safety.
Right, so she's talking about her safety and upping security. She also goes on to say that she cannot say everything right now. But that said, she then goes on to provide her opinion.
On the advice of my attorneys, I cannot share with all of you right now the evidence that we have accumulated of the events that have occurred. However, there will soon come a day where we will be able to present this evidence, and you will be able to see why it is we believe that Jeffrey and Shane are responsible for so much of the damage that has been caused. I can tell you this. It's now my opinion that Jeffrey and Shane were both bitterly jealous of James Charles's success. Jeffrey resented that so much of his business was centered around his biggest rival, and Shane did not like that James Charles wanted to make a documentary. Neither of them were happy with standing in his shadow on YouTube anymore. I believe James Charles was gaining more followers and receiving more views and more press faster than anyone in the history on the platform. And it's also my opinion that Jeffrey and Shane needed James marginalized and out of the way for their November launch of the Conspiracy Palette along with Shane's merch. I've also recently been informed that Jeffrey is allegedly a co-owner of Morphe. Before the scandal occurred, I had also been told that James Charles was about to develop an entire cosmetics line with the owners of Morphe.
She then goes on to say that she thinks that there were many players involved in all of this. She then goes on to say that to her, she believes that Shane Dawson and Jeffree Star have been defamatory. Also regarding defamation and a potential legal situation, she said,
as for everyone else involved that did anything underhanded or defamatory over the last year, I am still well within the statute of limitations for bringing a civil action to seek recovery for my damages. Should I proceed with this course of actions? My attorneys will be deposing all witnesses who have information about the truth of what happened here. So for everyone else whose hands are dirty, that have not yet come forward, be careful of your allegiance. You don't want to be on the wrong side of the truth.
And going on to say that the remainder of this will be handled privately. Right, and so with all of that showcase, once again, a reminder, if you want to see the full video, this is just some of the key points. Link to it down below. Things are developing in real time right now. I mean, as far as reactions, they're rolling in. It's not crazy to think that other videos will be uploaded. But one of the first reactions we saw was actually Shane Dawson going live while he was watching this video. And here is some of that.
This is insane. This is insane. This woman is a fucking... I'm going to wait till as many people get in here as... Keep playing it. Keep playing it.
I didn't even know I was making a video. So how is it that so many editorial outlets knew that something was coming before I had-
Because you messaged drama channels! Oh my God. Oh my God.
I struggled with the decision to film my video for days. The night before I did film, Jeffrey sent me what he claimed was an audio file from an alleged victim and told me to listen to the pain in their voice. The audio was clearly a small portion
of the
conversation. It wasn't enough for me to contact the authorities. It was enough to scare me.
Well, then why would you make a video on the matter claiming these allegations?
Because she is a fucking I can't. I don't want to say mean things about people. This is insane. This person literally... Oh my God. Okay, sorry. Keep pressing play. I need to get through this video so I can fucking... Oh my God.
As a victim of abuse myself...
Oh my God.
Terrifying.
You are so manipulative.
Think of facing public...
You're fake crying. You are fake crying. That is not real. Oh my God. Oh my God.
Oh my God.
I was molested. I have been. Oh my God.
Victim.
That is not.
And I made no mention of it in my video.
Oh my God.
Get off.
The night before posting my video by sister.
Oh my God.
I texted Shane, sharing my concerns for James Charles, that he was out of the country on the high floor of a hotel, and I was afraid for.
We also saw Shane Dawson tweet and then delete. This is a fucking lie and I'm losing my mind. Ryland Adams, who is engaged to Shane Dawson, also tweeting. Tati Westbrook, a masterclass in manipulation. The only way to save her reputation was to side with the person she tried to ruin. Make no mistake, this 40-year-old woman chose to post a video on her own accord. She riled up Shane before doing so to have one of the biggest creators backing her in the chance this all backfired. Shane very well would have posted a video exposing James had he felt so inclined. No receipts because she didn't want to expose the countless times she told Shane that she was a big girl doing this only for herself. Also tweeting, hope you enjoy those sold out vitamins that made you millions in minutes from Shane's support, you two-faced liar. And not today, motherfuckers, do not try me right now. Now, once again, I will reiterate, this is still a developing situation. It would not surprise me if more just continues to unfold before this video is uploaded, because we have to go through the editing process while you're watching it soon after. But truly, I know some people are going to dismiss this story as drama. This is a massive set of accusations, and this is a massive story. It's a story that involves multiple accusations of defamation, sexual assault, blackmail, with allegations from Tati that also cast a very wide net as far as how many people were involved and have known things. This is huge, not just in the court of public opinion, but you're talking about a possible huge legal situation. We've also reached out to Shane Dawson for a comment here. He has not replied as of recording this video. But with all of that said, that is where we are with the story right now. Obviously, we're going to keep our eyes on this. But with this, I do want to pass the question off to you. What are your thoughts on this? And that is where I'm going to end today's show. As always, thank you for being a part of this community, this family, for watching the videos, liking them, sharing them, being a part of the conversation down below. Also, if you're new here, you should definitely subscribe, definitely tap that bell to turn on notifications so you don't miss new videos. If you're looking for more to watch, of course, you got that right there. But with that said, of course, as always, my name's Philip DeFranco. You've just been filled in. I love yo faces and I'll see you tomorrow.
I hope you liked the video. Subscribe if you like it.